Welcome to Trick Talkers, a podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. And occasionally, spoiler alert, we talk about the odd cube rail game, or we tend to go a bit off-piste. We're your hosts, of course. If you've been listening for any time, you'll know that I'm Patrick, the one with a British accent, and I'm joined by
Ryan, the one with the American accent,
who sometimes calls himself Jewel Boy. With that out of the way, occasionally.
Just like we occasionally talk about card games.
Exactly, yeah. We keep people on their toes, really, here. That's what we do. Got a news update. And quite exciting, because we've got some news about somebody's first game. And Ryan, I know this game, you've played an iteration of it, and it's a love of yours, so I'll let you take it away.
There is a new publisher joining the ranks of the board gaming world, and that is Table Tapas Games. That is going to be from Justin and Nav, two amazing people. I've been lucky enough to play games with them, including the game they're going to be publishing, which is Stellar Gage. It is going to be renamed to Stellar Ventures. It is a game I have talked about in lengthy detail on episode 24, back when we talked about cube rails and 18XX games. I absolutely love Stellar Ventures, as it's going to be called now, and I am looking forward to seeing what Table Tapas Games does with that and any game they do in the future.
And a quick behind the scenes dive, the first take of this episode, Ryan lost his words when he was talking about this game. He was that excited about it. So hopefully, Justin and Nav, that does some testament to anticipation for your game. At least from Ryan's perspective, the one with the dude, the old artwork, the dude and the alien on the front look really cool. So I'd like to give it a go myself at some point.
Yeah, as Patrick just said, this is the second take we're doing just of the beginning intro, because I couldn't think of the right words to say for this game and for them creating the new, being a new publisher. So I'm really excited for their adventure in Stellar Ventures and the Table Tapas Games and what they'll be bringing.
Hopefully a tapas of games to us in the future, starting with this exciting extraterrestrial game, right? Again, I'm still baffled. Traditional rail game with alien theme is really cool, Ryan. Even if you don't like cube rails, I know you obviously love them, but for anyone out there who's never tried them, you just don't see that kind of theme as you go into these board game shops or online much. It's really cool.
Yeah, the game uses the theme really well, the aliens and the planets, everything else you're visiting. Now, the Stellar Ventures game, the art's going to be different than like the cover art you might see on the BGG page will be changing. And of course, any final art assets are going to be different as well. As far as theme and everything else goes, at this point, it is still going to be the same idea. Now, of course, that doesn't mean it can't change in the future. There's still a lot of play testing to be done and other plays of the game to be played to see where that goes. But either way, again, I'm really, really excited to see where this goes. I'm very happy. Justin and Nav, congratulations for getting Stellar Ventures and for Table Tapas Games.
Yeah, congratulations again. One to keep an eye on. Excuse me while I die. I've got a cold again. It's that time of year. Anyway, moving on.
I'll fill in for you while you finish coughing.
Appreciate that, Ryan. If you catch me dying, I'll let you take over.
Perfect.
Hopefully we'll make it through to the end of the episode. That will be nice.
I believe in you.
A gift to people to take with them after I've gone. Anyway, that's there we go. It's very morbid, but that wasn't the news. It was about Board Game Dojo.
Okay. Yeah, next up on news. So we're, as you probably might notice here, we're doing a little news update section. So we're going to just be bringing you some news and other things that's been happening around in the trick-taking and card game world, stuff that we really wanted to point out in case you may have missed it. The next thing that's going to be up is the Board Game Dojo podcast and YouTube channel has a new host. Jaina is one of the new hosts on the show, and you can actually check out her newest episode about history of trick-taking. It is out now. So we'll put a link in the show notes for you to be able to go check it out. And obviously check out any of the other Board Game Dojo episodes if you have not. We've mentioned them many times in the past on the show. They are also one half of the group that helped with those Tokyo Game Market mystery boxes we mentioned on the previous episode.
Ah, yes, the Tokyo mystery boxes that travel-games.co.uk and the Board Game Dojo were doing and working on together look like there's some photos that have been emerging from some of the people who've received them, and they look fantastic and they've put a lot of love into them. And all of this is, of course, to say that the Board Game Dojo themselves make some wonderful videos too. I know they've just released one. They've done a Harvest review, Ryan, so I'm keen to check that out very soon. I know that's new episodes just come out. And also checking out their new co-host, Jaina's content as well. And I've always been a big fan of Board Game Dojo and some of the videos they're coming out with. I do recommend checking out Board Game Dojo on YouTube.
Yeah, the Harvest one's going to be a great video for them. I know the expansion has been a hot commodity recently, too, with those cute little meeples they come with. I don't know how the expansion plays. I've only played the base game. But thankfully, one of my local friends was able to get a copy of the expansion. So we'll see if those meeples are worth it.
Ryan, I have to tell you, I managed to get an expansion.
Oh, you did?
And I have played with it. Yes.
Ooh.
Secret sources, of course.
Do tell, then.
I will tell you that I really like it. This expansion, super simple addition, but adds big spice or cute little vegetable meeples at least. There's barely any rules overhead to speak of, which is why I like it so much. But also because it's such a simple inclusion. Now, you could try it out with cubes, but obviously the vegetable meeples are that cute that you probably do want to grab it because it's cheap anyway. If you can source it, hopefully that becomes more widely available. But literally, when you make, and for anyone who hasn't played Harvest, the game is essentially you're harvesting vegetables and there's a bit of sort of, hate to say the word, I don't know, semi-cooperation in helping each other out for a little bit, but you're very much out for yourself. But there are moments of, oh, if we both do this, then that player's going to miss out on points or get shafted by vegetables. We mentioned that before, but I'm pretty sure that's safe for work to say that, right? Safe to work check? Oh, there we go. As for the vegetables themselves, hopefully that's given you a little bit of context without getting into a full rules rabbit hole. And it's not a very complicated game anyway. If you if you make a set of vegetables, even if it's not a set that of vegetables that's going into your score pile or benefiting you, you take a meeple of that vegetable. So it could be a tomato, it could be a piece of corn. You put it next to you. And very simply, at the end of the game, if you've got a majority of certain types of meeple, so maybe you've got the majorities in tomato when you look across the whole table, you get a 30 points bonus. And you're going to do that for all the different types of vegetables. But there's quite a lot of tension because those piles of vegetable meeples are very quickly running out. So you can't get them all. And you have to have a clear majority, which means that the way you think about Harvest as a game, I would say that it increases the cooperation element, or at least it increases the tendency for you to be completing other players' fields, even when it's not going to directly get you points through picking up these harvest cards, because you know that you're getting a tasty little meeple out of it, and that's going to count towards your majority at the end of the game. So it's a bit like push your luck gamble. Are you going to get enough? And even though it's not benefiting you, so it's kind of giving you that decision space, which is really cool because it adds something to the game which you can just totally leave out or include depending on how you want to think about Harvest as a game. Tactical meeple decision making, which wasn't there before. Really cool and big recommend for trying it out.
I mean, you sold me. That spice level right there sounded great. Would you say it's worth 1 of 12 if somebody was following along with the board game challenge themselves?
So the good news is it's an expansion, so it won't count as the one of the 12 games.
Well, so I mean the base game. If they don't own the base game and they're like, oh, this expansion sounds great, I want to get that, and now I need to get the base game, that's all. That's one they'd have to add. Would you say Harvest is worth it?
I would say so. If you're fine with Take That, okay, because it is, there is Take That in this game, but it is a very short playing, light, breezy game, which you could almost argue is just a filler that you can just constantly keep replaying because it's that good. I think it deserves a spot in somebody's 1 of 12, especially if you can get it with the expansion. If you know going in that this is a game that is a liked affair, like I said, has Take That, and is a bit of a, just a jolly old good time with vegetables.
I think the Take That part isn't as bad, because I am very much a person who does not like Take That in almost any game. To me, and this might sound harsh, it seems like a lazy design when there's Take That. The game can't figure out a way to stop you from making a player who's doing well continue to do well. You just have to try and chop them at the knees by playing a Take That and steal their resources or take something from them randomly that they weren't expecting, and it messes with their flow or their puzzle or whatever tableau they have. To me, that just is always it's a really annoying aspect to a game. But in this game, when you do the Take That part, you're not always necessarily hurting someone, especially at least with the expansion now. I mean, in the base game, you're giving someone negative points. You're just giving somebody negative points.
For sure.
Yeah, there's no way around that. But because, like you said, the game is so quick, and I feel like we're going in circles, so we'll probably move on to the next thing shortly.
Crop circles,
yeah. It doesn't feel as bad with the Take That is ultimately what I'm getting at as well. So even if you aren't someone who likes Take That and you're just like me, it's still one to look into, I would say.
It's funny. It's entertaining. It never feels that personal. That is why I think the Take That in this game is completely fine and has gone down well with the groups I've played it with.
All right. Before I say anything back to it, we're going to move on. Otherwise, I feel like we'll keep going. So that's Harvest. Check it out. And actually, last thing, it's going to be really hard to find on BGG if you just searched Harvest. So if you really want to see which game we're talking about, if you haven't already looked it up already, go into the show notes and you'll be able to click it directly. There's like 30 different games named Harvest, so it might be hard to find. But moving on.
Well, I've got a life hack here though, before we move on.
Okay, we're not moving on. Okay, we're going to spend this is just a Harvest episode now.
It's just a Harvest episode, because if you put H, Hotel, Alpha, Romeo, Victor, Harv, aka in BGG, and you scroll down the list and look for the one in 1992 with the Japanese writing by it, it's a lot easier to find than typing Harvest. Weird, but there's a little Harvest life hack for you when you're thinking about plowing vegetables.
That might not be safe for work.
So,
well, that's fun. I guess that's good to know. Just type less letters and you'll find it. I'll still put it in the show notes, though. Just look in the show notes. That's the easiest way. We've done the hard work for you.
We've done the Harvest work for you. Safely moving on with work in mind.
Yeah. Next up on our news, because we're still in the news update section, is Xylitar. This is designed by Chris Ray, and this is actually a new reimplementation of Magic Trick. It is coming from Bezier Games, and this is going to be a big year for Bezier Games in 2024, as they're calling it. It's the year of the card games for them. They plan on having 7 different card games, 4 which are going to be trick takers and 1 that's a climber shedder. And Xylitar is one of those 4 trick takers, along with Sandbag by Ted Alsbach. And Magic Trick is a game that I have been lucky enough to have the original copy of and have been able to play. I know Patrick hasn't had the chance to. But with Xylitar, they are going to be making some changes to the original Magic Trick. There's going to be some scoring, and I saw pictures of the art on the back of the cards. There's actually ranges of what numbers could be, so it's a little bit more helpful to know where you could have that card be. So I'm definitely interested to see what they have done with everything. I know Chris Ray wrote on the Portland Game Collective Discord server like a quick overview of the changes, but reading that and actually playing it and experiencing it are 2 different things.
Yes, I'd be keen to hear regarding quality of life improvements, if we regard them as improvements. I've not played, like you said, Ryan, the original Magic Trick. It's a game that I have had on my radar for some time now, and Chris Ray's obviously comes out with some good stuff. So be very keen to try it out, and hopefully we can compare our thoughts on a future episode and see if there is still magic in the air.
I see what you did there.
There we go. So yeah, that is one on the radar. Looking forward to checking it out. Keep coming with the good stuff.
And I do want to share this real quick because I thought this was a great note from Chris. So Chris, apologies if you didn't want this to be on the air. In the PGC server, once this game was announced, Chris had mentioned that Bezier has been a long time favorite publisher for him. Ted Alsbach is either my favorite designer or in a small tie with Friedman Fries and Alan Moon. So getting to work with Ted and see him iterate was a dream come true. I ended up with 7 publishers inquiring about publishing Magic Trick, and I couldn't be happier with the end result.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty amazing as well to be in a position where you've released a game and you have several publishers coming at you to get it published. So kudos to Chris. Great achievement. And like I said, a game I've had my eye on. So we'll see if the magic's still there.
Yeah, magic.
Abracadabra.
Shall we move on to the next news segment?
I think so. When you're
and
saying
in today's
abracadabra,
sports, we've got... this actually wouldn't be sports. This would be history. We have The 6 of 8 by Carol Legros and Naughty Gnomes, Less History by DJ Kennel are available for pre-order on the New Mill Industries website. 6 of 8 is the Henry VIII team trick-taking game that I absolutely love. It's great. The theme of that game is fantastic. If you want to watch a rules video from Carol, the designer herself, she goes into more information about the historical thematic elements that are in the game. So it's really cool to get a behind the scenes of why this card does this and why the actions through the trick play does this as well. And the different suit hierarchy being the different reigns for the queens. Just everything about that game sings so well thematically.
I like the fact, Ryan, that she's actually taken upon herself to give that thematic detail. Because so often we play games and they're like, well, you know, they've just slapped some characters on it and it's cool. The theme was cute. It was nice. But when a designer takes it upon themselves to take that one step further, give some context with it, you know, like we see with some games out of the market, Pax Premier, etc. Historical context, I think, is great. And it's also a learning opportunity. And families playing it and people who've got interest in historical periods will get something else out of that as well. So I really like that and would like to play this game. Heard about it a long time ago and have been curious about it, forgotten about it. You've mentioned it again now on this episode. And Tudor history is fascinating. So, yeah, this is on my radar. Don't know about naughty gnomes in terms of would Henry VIII have kept gnomes? Maybe.
It's possible. Maybe in a multiverse, in an alternate universe, he could have. We don't know because DJ has not made a video explaining the history of his naughty gnomes. So DJ, if you're listening, you need to get onto that and make it happen.
You do need to sort that out. Yeah, it was maybe one of the gnomes fishing for too long and then he fell into the pond. Who knows?
We have no idea. We can't confirm until DJ tells us. But Naughty Gnomes is an area control trick-taking game that has Mayfollow aspects and the changing hierarchy. If you've ever played Boast or Nothing, it has that similar feel. Mm-hmm. A lot of DJ's games use that mechanic, the trump hierarchy constantly changing whichever suit drops to the bottom. But with Naughty Gnomes, it doesn't immediately drop to the very bottom of the hierarchy. It depends on the card that wins will determine where it drops. It changes up the aspect of what you let win or lose, and it's really interesting, along with the area control, which can be quite thinky in a good or potentially bad way. If you're a little AP prone, trying to figure out where you can get majorities on the different hexes and where you place in the trick determines where you can even place along those hexes. So there's a lot going on in that game for such a little package, which is always great. Seeing the boundaries that can be pushed with just a deck of cards and a couple tiles is always great.
Yeah, I'm all for it, Ryan. And like you said, we've seen in Boast or Nothing, that's a really elegant game we know works really well. We're big advocates of it here. Obviously, you've got other games like Bugs of Backyardia, the hierarchy system, that's cool too. So anything with that twist does appeal to me. Would like to try it out and again, just pushing the boundaries, like you say, of seeing what's possible to do with just a deck of cards always amazes me. Even some of the most simple print and plays that I've done, I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this has got potential. Hope it gets picked up. So, yeah, one to watch.
Sure. And just quickly plugging DJ, if you do like Naughty Gnomes and you really like his board style game with that hierarchy, there's a handful of other games that he has designed that have a similar feel to that. Boards might be larger, might be more suits, the hierarchy, the way it changes, but they all have that similar cohesive play style to them. Sins of Our Fathers is another one that I really like. Trick of the Rails, Tricky Mixes. If you go to his BGG page, which again, I'll post in the show notes to make it easy for you to get to, you can see all the different games that he's done. And he's made some other ones too, like tarot related games and stuff.
It was Hold My Beer as well, which I'd heard of before as well. It's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, Hold My Beer and Oopsie. That's a tarot one. The 3-player only and the 4-player only game. I've only played Hold My Beer a couple times, but I really liked it.
And I like holding a beer, so chances are good.
There you go. All right, moving on to the next news segment. Dealer's Dilemma was voted to be the next game on the Trickster's Table app. Dealer's Dilemma is a game designed by Shreesh Bhatt. You're probably familiar with their work on Aurum, a very popular and successful game pretty recently from Pandasaurus Games. And Dealer's Dilemma is going to be the next one on the Trickster's Table app. It's been a minute since we've talked about that app, but it's still out there. It's still amazing. Dan is doing the trick-taking god's work by getting a lot of these games put on an app so you can play it by yourself when you can't get any of your friends together or you're sitting in line waiting for something. There's a handful of games on there, and the list is going to be slowly growing more and more.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Ryan, because I think that app's great. I haven't used it for some time, but it was certainly good as well if you're perhaps not getting groups together regularly or you want to try some games or you have a bit of time to kill on a flight or something. So it's a really good idea. As for Shreesh, I was lucky enough to play one of their Aurum in an earlier iteration. I haven't played the latest release version, really enjoyed that, and they're a very well accomplished designer. So I'm sure Dealer's Dilemma will be a good one to try out and play and keep my eye on, especially if it comes on Trickster's Table. Could be a means to trying it out and seeing what I think of that one.
Yeah, it's a great way to try before you buy, however you may be able to buy those if they're still unpublished or not. But getting access to any of these games, whether it's Board Game Arena or Trickster's Table, it's nice to see a lot of these card games have the functionality to play online like that when you can.
Yeah, sure. BGA, playingcards.io. I know I've tried a lot of trick takers through that, played some with yourself. Perhaps some don't land, but it sorts the games out that you want to buy for your group or you think are worth the investment. And that's really good for getting a feel for some of these.
Yeah. T3C, otherwise known as the Texas Trick Taking Con. For those that don't live in the U.S., Texas is one of the 50 states. Did you
it's
know that?
Place.
Was that fun fact for you today?
I've been to the Panhandle before, Ryan. I did a bit of Route 66 back
Look
in the
at
day.
Me country-splaining the U.S. to you.
I love the geographical breakdown, though. So yeah. That was good.
It's a massive state, kind of hard to miss.
Pretty hot.
Yep, pretty hot. And there was a get-together or convention, however you want to call these little tiny things, which are great that there is more and more of them happening. But this was the second year for T3C, and it happened this past weekend at the time of the recording. By the time you hear the episode, it'll have been a full extra week beyond that. But anyway, Derek from Dads on a Map, the tricky section of the podcast, is sort of the main host of that convention. So I know he's going to be covering it, or I'm assuming he's going to be covering it on the next Tricky episode. So you should absolutely go over there and check out Dads on a Map and their Tricky podcast episodes for trick-taking goodness, but also to hear all the different things that they played at their get-together. Might be a little similar in the aspect of when Daniel came on the last episode and we just talked about the things we played. There's probably going to be a decent amount of crossover. since the new Tokyo Game Market games were what these groups played, but there could be some good stuff. And of course, just hearing Derek's perspective and whoever else he may have on of either the same games or different games and how they went for them.
Yeah, I'm secretly a little bit jealous, Ryan, of this trick-taking con, because there aren't many organized in the UK. You'd like to see a more emergence of those coming through in the UK and people organizing such things. It's such a great opportunity to get together with like-minded, you know, fans of the genre and trying out some of these Tokyo Games Market games. Like you said, I enjoyed your, I heard your episode with Dan, a lot of fun. And even if the Venn diagram is tight, if there's a lot of overlap, that's cool because it's good to get other perspectives on some of these titles as well. Good to hear it from horses' mouths, so to speak.
And you know, all it takes is the question. Who wants to start playing games with me? Send out that message and you'll get people, hopefully, in the UK to start getting your own convention over there.
Yeah, that's it. And I know a lot of work goes into it and, you know, venue and things. And obviously we've got the PGC con that happens. And I know so much work goes into that. So if anybody does want to start one, I'm not quite putting my neck on the line just yet. Doing a podcast every week. So that commitment there. But I... kudos to anyone who does, and I know it's you know, a lot of effort to organize these things, and it's so exciting when it all comes together and you meet lots of new people, which is very, very cool.
While it's out there in the atmosphere, we'll see if anything comes from
the universe.
It for you.
Let's see if it materializes.
Well, I do look forward to officially meeting you in person at the PGC Con. We've never actually met, obviously being in the UK and the US makes that hard to do. I don't know, this might also be a news update. You're going to be
spoiler alert.
Yeah, you'll be coming to PGC Con in July, and I'll be going there as well. So we'll be able to play some games together in person.
So that'll be great fun, and look forward to meeting everybody who listens, who perhaps is going, and also giving you guys my thoughts and perspectives. And no doubt me and Ryan will be playing a few card games, I think it's safe to say.
I think it'd be safe to say. Maybe some Trick Takers, Shatters, Climbers, and occasionally other card games. Maybe some Cube Rails, 18XX, or maybe even a mashup between the two of them. City Tricks, or Stellar Gauge. We could have Stellar Ventures if you want to play a full one. But if you want to mix Trick Taking and 18XX together, I mean, I'm smooth with that transition, I think.
Smooth operator.
There is a game called City Tricks, which is a mashup between Trick Taking and 18XX. There is a big group buy that I have been organizing and should be getting a bunch of copies in pretty soon, so I'll be able to give that a try. But it is not like Trick of the Rails, where that was... that's the trick-taking game that has 18XX as its theme, whereas this one's supposed to be more of all of the mechanics that are involved in an 18XX game will exist in here and also uses trick-taking. Like, the time on the box, or at least on the BGG page, is 100 and some minutes. Let me see. Actually, I'll pull it up right now. It is 75 to 150 minutes. So it's the full game.
Yeah, because I read something about... I tried Shikoku 1889 with my group. Didn't land in terms of for the group. What I will say, though, is... I read something about this game containing rusting trains, and there were rusting trains in Shikoku 1889. So immediately I was like, well, now I've played an 18XX game, I can see some of that DNA. And also, you know, having played Cube Rail games as well, I can see that DNA coming through. So I'd be really interested to see, we're pushing the limits of what can be done with the trick-taking genre. I'm just very curious to be like, well, how have they made this an 18XX game, and what's the overlap? This is novel and good stuff.
The way a lot of board games end up getting card game versions is almost like we're taking an 18XX game and giving it a card game version. So I'm thoroughly interested to see how this one plays out. It even says on the main blurb, the games unfolded over 3 years, divided into three phases, the trick round, operating round, and stock round. So there's the two normal rounds you get in 18XX games of operating and stock, and then there's a trick round for the trick taking.
There wasn't a trick round, I'd be very disappointed, Ryan.
That's true. We would be missing out a lot of the trick taking part if it didn't have one.
Just playing 18XX. Yeah.
Yeah. definitely keep your eyes and ears open for more on that. Once I get my copy in, I'll be very keen to get that played almost as quickly as I can. There's already a couple people in my group that are itching ready to play it as well. So I doubt it'll be too long after getting it to where I'll be able to play it. Now, I don't know if you are planning on getting a copy or if you know anyone in the area that might be getting one.
Well, one thing is for sure, Ryan, even if not, I'll certainly be playing with you at PGCCon. So if I'm sure we'll talk about it before, because Ryan, right? This is
if I love the game, there's no stopping me from talking about it.
Exactly. But I would be, having now done an 18XX, having played Keep Rails, I'd like to see how that emerges in the trick-taking genre. Trick of the Rails, it was a game I'd eyed up before. I'd heard mixed things. I wasn't, you know, sure of it. Is it just a train theme? But it sounds like this is kind of taking it to the next level and really integrating the theme. You know, Pandora's box has opened.
We'll see. We'll see what steps out.
Yes, exactly.
Two more things on our news update. The next one, sort of a little bit of a news. It's actually just a way to find more news in the future. So Schultzy, an amazing human that we've talked about many times before on the podcast, has created an Excel spreadsheet of U.S. trick-taking climbing releases. Now, of course, this is really only for the U.S. people, so outside of the U.S., you got to find someone as amazing as Schultzy to do one for you guys. But this sheet basically lists all the different games and where you can find them, how they're available, whether it's a pre-order, crowdfunding, straight from a publisher's website, to retail, information about the game, any links that are provided, the style of game it's supposed to be, trick-taking, climbing, shedding, must follow, may follow, etc. It's an amazing list. And again, we'll put it in the show notes so you can get to it quickly. It's got a handful of things that we've already talked about on the episode today and other things that we didn't even come close to talking about now. So if you want more information almost at all the times, favorite that list.
Just a testament, really, isn't it, Ryan, to how many games are now coming out and the renaissance in trick-taking that we now need Excel sheets.
Crazy.
I mean, kudos to Schultzy for doing it. And it's just, you know, a few years ago, I never thought that the amount of trick-taking games coming out every year, and now look at us, and we might need to even break this down by different regions, right? This is wild, but also exciting, and I imagine there's a few columns filled in on that sheet.
Oh, there's plenty. There's plenty of information for everything.
Right.
And I do want to point out as well, gotta give love to James Nathan, because James had originally created a list a few years back that was also very, very involved with all the different things about the different types of games and the play style for them. And I think it's like the trick-taking taxonomy Excel sheet. It hasn't been updated in a little while, and I also haven't checked in a couple months because it had stopped being updated for a bit. But even then, just the games up to that point, there was a lot on there, and there's a lot of helpful information. And now that Excel spreadsheet is more about games already released, not upcoming ones. So if you combine both of those, you've got like all the information you'll need on the card games.
Just a real powerhouse of information, really, which is great for making informed decisions. Well, we always say it's difficult to know with some of these games what you're getting unless you've tried it out. And sometimes that's not possible. So at least people are going to have access to release schedules. So please keep doing what you're doing. I would love at some point for someone to come to me with some numbers in terms of, you know, the stats on the releases and how many games coming out in a period of time, just because I think it could be pretty fascinating. So Ryan, maybe there's some homework for you or Schultzy to start putting graphs together and on that Excel sheet.
You hear that, Schultzy? I'm not doing that homework, so that's up to you.
Ryan doesn't want to do graphs.
No, that's horrible. I don't like math. So yeah, definitely check that out. Good stuff. And the last thing is Cheese Tricks, which is a game designed by Mauricio Torselli, and this game is currently available for pre-order worldwide. So great news, it's more than just the US or the UK. There's pretty much all parts of the world. There's a single area where I'll put in the show notes. It'll take you to the different websites, depending on the part of the world you're in, to where you can get it. I know Tricky Imports is the one that's going to do it for the US, but depending on where you are in the world, you'll have a different way to access it. Cheese Tricks is also on Board Game Arena, so you can easily try the game before you pre-order it, if you would look into doing that. And I know Patrick and I have had the chance to play the game together, actually. I've played it a handful more times than Patrick, but we were able to play it together.
Yeah, we had some nice games of this. Now, the theme, really like it. You know, the crazy cats and the mice theme, very, very cool. Very cheesy, I've got to add. Had to get that in there somewhere. Liked it. The game plays with missions that have to be completed or not, depending on how far you want to go down the mouse hole, should we say?
You said it.
I've said it. There is a point system around that. So maybe you don't do any of the missions, or maybe you do all of them. If you just do two of them, it's not great in terms of scoring. And if you do one of them, it's okay. And the missions kind of remind me of crew-esque missions in terms of do this or do that, or maybe you win a certain card, or maybe you capture the least amount of a card type or card number. It's in that kind of vein. And what you're trying to do is do several rounds of that and end up, as with all of these games, with the highest score. I'm sure we're going to discuss the missions a bit more and give this a bit of context, because the missions are fun. Yeah, I like some of the missions and some of them might be relative to what card you start with and a bit of luck in that sense. But for the general part, the spirit of the game is fun. The scoring, I'm not a fan of. Okay, didn't like the scoring, but that is where a lot of this discussion, no doubt, Ryan, will be focused in on this episode. So have I missed anything in terms of how the game works from a high-level perspective, do we think?
No, that was perfect.
Okay. Cool then. So shall we...
You expected me to have notes until you missed something.
Compare invisible notes.
Yeah, I mean, high-level, that's pretty much it. There's definitely some nitty-gritty things, okay. Trump, number, round, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah. High-level, that's absolutely the flow of the game, I would agree.
Okay, and what's your thoughts on missions specifically then? You're a fan of the missions too, generally speaking?
Yeah, there's enough different missions. There's 50 total cat cards or mission cards in the game. Most of them are the same idea. So like you said, the most of this, it's pretty much, you know, the most of all four suits.
Yeah.
So there are some repeat types, but there's enough variation because there's only ever three out in a round. You shuffle them, they're always going to be random. So there's definitely lots of choice. There's lots of decision-making every round. Being able to look at the missions and what combinations they are will change how you approach the exact same hand. You could be dealt the same 10 cards. If different missions come out, you're going to be looking at it completely differently, which is really cool.
Yeah, and agree with that. And it's going to change the cadence of the game, going to change how you think about it tactically, trying to complete those missions or not, or avoiding completing them. Nice thing about BGA is obviously from an overview perspective, you can see exactly what's going on. And I imagine playing this in a small group of people at a table, that'll be fine and completely serviceable as well. The problem is that this game, the scoring is a bit at odds with the missions in regards to you could just have a bad hand and whether you complete the missions or not really becomes super flawless to the strength of your hand. So if you just got a really good hand and perhaps you got Trump in there and win a load of tricks and maybe you get all three missions because, of course, you've got a really strong hand, that can kind of get in the way of the flow of the game, and I think that makes the missions less interesting as a knock-on effect of the scoring.
Yeah, and just to go a little more in depth on the scoring to understand why, because I also agree with you.
Okay.
So the way scoring will work is based on just taking as many tricks as possible at the end of the day. your multiplier will change based on the number of missions you take. If you have 0 missions, every trick you take is 2 points. If you take 1 mission, every trick is 1 point. If you take 2 missions, it's 0 points, no matter how many tricks you take. And if you take all 3, it's 3 points per trick. So there's that sort of fun shoot the moon aspect to the game. You want none or you want all of them. And that's really cool. I want to get back to that and we'll discuss more of that. But ultimately, no matter which number of missions you do besides 2, it all relates to the number of tricks you take. If you don't have a good enough hand to take 4, 5, 6 tricks, you're not really going to score that many points. Most of the time, it's the person who takes the most tricks is just going to get the most points.
Right, because unlike the crew, you can share missions if you get a tie on certain objectives. So it's possible that there are 3 cats on the table and 2 or 3 people can also do and get ties, and it's not sort of, well, because I've got it, you can't get it. No. So that's kind of nice, but also then you allow for this situation that you've just explained, Ryan, where it's, you know, relative to the number of tricks you get, you can end up just completely steamrolling some of the other players, mm-hmm. certainly over several rounds to a point where it becomes difficult to catch up or where you kind of know who the winner is.
Yeah. So going back to the conversation I was saying about the missions and knowing the 0 and 3, to me, that's the hook of the game. Looking at your hand, seeing what the 3 missions are out there are, and deciding, can I take all 3 of those? If you can't, then you want to take none of them. You don't want 1 or 2, that you just never do. So if you know that you're trying to go for missions or not, that should be what you're focusing on in trick play. But because you're so focused on winning tricks, because you need to win tricks to be able to score well, it makes the missions a secondary focus more than they should be. Does that make sense? Is that kind of what you feel as well?
Yeah, I think the focus becomes more like a generic, I hate to use the word generic, but a lot of trick takers, the focus is, right, to win the most tricks. And that is the game. You win the most tricks, you get points, and therefore your score goes up and you think tactically about how to win tricks. Maybe you just got a good hand, and that happens in a lot of these games. So it's a shame, because of the secondary thing that feels secondary, at least, that, like you said, Ryan, to have these missions in the background that you really want to participate with or interact with, because it's exciting and to see who can get what cat and have that really matter. And the fact you've got the multiplier in the way to think about, oh, well, you know, if I want the multiplier to be as high as possible, this is how I've got to do it, combined with the need to win loads of tricks, it takes away from the fact, and that's a shame. So we did try it a different way, didn't we, Ryan? Because we tried it the original game way, the how the designer intended, and we normally do that. We appreciate the vanilla game before we start trying to experiment with stuff.
And I do want to add, before you explain the way we mm-hmm. tried the scoring, I still really enjoy the game. I do think the scoring detracts from the full enjoyment, and maybe as we discuss this new scoring thing, it may be better. But I do think the overall gameplay itself, even with rules as written now, is still enjoyable. I've played it 8 times already with those rules, and I'm still itching to play it more, because the puzzle for those missions, the 0 and 3, does still exist. Even if I'm saying it might be more secondary because of the way you need to just win tricks is, it's not all that bad. It doesn't sound as terrible as that we might be making it to be, especially because I said you can play it on BGA. Absolutely give it a try. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I'd try it out. Give it a go. But anyways, back to you, Patrick, if you want to go on
back
to the scoring.
Cats and cheese.
Sorry, so just again, when I get excited about something, I lose my words and I just want to just blurt things out. So I really enjoy the game, though.
Yeah, and you don't play a game 8 times if you don't like it. I mean, let's be honest, quite frank, in a sea of thousands of trick takers. Did you play muscle taking 8 times, by the way?
No, I played that too, and it did not deserve the second play. That was because okay. I willed it to try and work, and it did not work. And just in case anyone didn't hear, that was muscle taking. And that's as much as I'll say about that game.
There was a dude on the front with the coloured hair, and it didn't get a Ryan Interesting Award. So,
no.
But this episode isn't about muscles, right? So, cheesies and catsies and tricksies, as Gollum might, Smeagol might say on a Lord of the Rings episode somewhere.
That's a promo card for cheese tricks. One of the cats will be in
there. There we go.
Smeagol.
promo Smeagol. Classic. I like it. We're onto something here. So Mauricio's going to go with all this inspiration from us and a promo idea. We're just giving it all away for free. Great.
Love it.
At least send us the card though, if you do ever make it. Just put it on the wall somewhere. So what we decided to do was make the multiplier the score. So for winning all three, was it times three, I believe, Ryan? Times three, it was just a score of three.
Whatever the multiplier that it currently was now is what the score was. So if you took all three missions, it was 3 points. If you took one mission, 1 point, zero missions, 2 points, two missions, 0 points. So that was the score for it. So now you're focused really just on the missions.
That's what we did. And because we did that, our radars were recalibrated and we religiously focused on the missions as the primary way to engage with the game, which I feel like is the spirit of the game anyway, in terms of potentially Mauricio's intention, the mission system. And we really, really, really liked that. And I can't speak for Ryan, but I certainly found the game to be more interesting, more dynamic. It wasn't just about winning the most amount of tricks. It was about interacting with those missions and really studying your hand in a different way. There was a little bit more downtime, but that's because we were crunching on the cheese and thinking about the missions. We weren't just thinking about, oh, well, I'll play this card because I've got Trump and I'm going to win it anyway. It was a bit more flowy in terms of crunch. So that was a good thing. And I think if Mauricio could take that feedback and potentially look at maybe a variant or doing something with it in that way, or perhaps folks who want to try it like that and like the sound of the missions might get something else out of it.
Totally. I do think that it requires a little bit more play to see, because I know, so when we played it, we tried to do a side-by-side. Thankfully, BGA did the normal scoring as it is. Uh-huh. So we were keeping track of our new score on the side and then seeing what the actual game did to see if the correlation between what your multiplier was for the missions and what the final score was actually different. Because it's one of those things where it might have felt different during gameplay, but if the score was the same, the person who took the most tricks and most missions still ended up winning the game, then it doesn't really matter almost in that sense for the scoring, which to me is really what I want to get at. I'm not saying our scoring is better than the original scoring. I'm not saying it's worse than the original scoring. I'm saying I'm not sure yet. But I do know for a fact the gameplay was, as you said, a little bit more crunchy and you were more focused on the missions. And to me, that was more enjoyable. I didn't have to worry about knowing tricks are related to my score. It was just the missions are related. So I was able to lose tricks to put myself in a better position to complete or not complete a mission later versus, oh, I need to take this trick because I need to win as many tricks as possible.
Yeah, and of course, this was a really sandboxier way to approach a game that has been published and with the current system. We did talk about, oh, you know, if somebody gets so far ahead, you just call it at that point instead of playing out the rounds for the sake of it. There's some things there for, there's some cheesy tips there or cheesy variants for Mauricio to go away, crunch on, see if he likes them and think about. And this game is cool, but I think we made it cooler, whether that's me in an alternative universe, I don't know. And certainly what we played, Ryan, probably does need quite a bit of work. But there's something there, and I like it. There's something that we curated that evening by trying it differently. Had we not done that and just played the game as is, I don't think I would have been as hot on it. Theme aside, and mission, the spirit of the missions, because that's cool. Like the crew, Pompiers, extreme tricks. Any game with those kinds of things really get my brain whirring, and that's cool.
For sure. I would agree with that as well. The mission-based trick-taking games are really high up on my list of games in general. Pretty much all the ones you listed are some of my favorite. And I feel like in a general consensus, those are a lot of some people's favorite games. There's something about completing missions that really helps you focus during a trick-taking game. Knowing there's specific tricks that are important or specific cards are important makes you focus on those tricks or cards or timing elements to when you need to make that certain thing happen. Whereas in most straightforward trick-taking games, it's just win as many tricks or lose as many tricks or bid on the number of tricks you think you'll take. Which is obviously can still be good. I mean, don't want to say that.
Of course. Yeah.
But knowing that there are goals to attain, there's a lot of things that we like in board games, even just regular board games in general. You're given a secret mission you have to complete. You need to go to these certain areas in this worker placement game. If you have your workers there by the end of the game, you'll get bonus points. So it takes the grand scheme of the game and it lets you focus on something. It also, I think, helps people who don't know how to play the game yet get a better understanding of what the game's trying to get you to do by saying, hey, here's this very specific mission you need to complete. Try to do that.
Yeah, and if you gave me this game, Cheese Tricks, and you said, well, here's a standard deck of cards, forget the missions entirely, you just win as many tricks as you can. Well, firstly, it wouldn't be Cheese Tricks anymore, right? But secondly, it wouldn't be very interesting because there's no bidding. You just, whatever card you just play, it kind of plays itself. But conversely, what Cheese Tricks has tried to do with missions, I can see where the goodness could really be. And I can see that's what makes it a game for me is the mission stuff. So anything that focuses on that is a big win. So I wish Mauricio best of luck with the pre-orders, the release worldwide. Hope he's really successful, but also hope that consideration is given to feedback and potentially like to see some other iterations of that scoring system going forwards.
Absolutely.
Well, are we cheesed out, Ryan?
I think we are cheesed out. We've been captured by all the cats.
Yeah, the cat. We've run away with the cats, or we haven't because we're still here, but it's, yeah. Running out of jokes at this point, and that's not like me.
What? Wait, so, are you running out of jokes just for today's episode or for all the episodes?
Cause oh, no, just cheese jokes.
That's, oh, just, dang. You're so
not,
close.
You're not safe from it, unfortunately. Yeah, that's sorry.
All
to
I know is
you.
I don't like how many puns I've been doing in the last couple episodes. You're starting to rub off on me too much, and I'm not a fan.
That's cool, but what I'm curious about is when you go away from the podcast, do they slip into everyday conversation?
They don't. It's just something about being on the microphone and talking about the games. I don't know what it is. The persona of you just like oozes out of my microphone and it gets into me somehow.
There are worse things, Ryan. There are worse things.
That's true. Shall we talk about another game before we come up with more puns?
I feel like we should. So a game that has infiltrated this episode is called...
Oh, it's already started.
Just hit it out of the ballpark. It's called Infiltrators by John Keane, Liam Keane. Why am I bringing this game up? Well, it's not a trick taker, firstly, but we do sometimes, occasionally, more often than not now, talk about other card games as well.
I love how you always point out we occasionally talk about other card games when we do talk about it. Like, we have to give our street cred about... No, it's called Trick Talkers, but we are going to occasionally talk about other card games.
Yeah, I feel like we could give ourselves permission to do it now without wrapping it in red tape like a British politician. But there we go, I did it. So just in case anyone's like, oh no, go back to trick taking. No, well, it's Infiltrators. This game is, I feel like it's gone under the radar, Ryan. Is it a game that you've played?
It is not. I had only really heard about it after you had mentioned it, so I haven't had a chance to know much about it.
Okay, so the good news is there is publishing news for this. Pandasaurus is bringing it to the US later this year. I believe you can play it with a standard deck of cards. Shock horror, but I believe it's possible. There's a rule set on BGG that allows you to play with a standard deck of cards for anyone who wants to try it at home. The production of the official game, which I believe comes from a Hong Kong publisher, Broadway Toys, is lovely. They give you little wooden bullets, Ryan, and they give you a cardboard gun. It's completely safe, of course, but it's a nice thematic touch because you are cooperatively working together to deduce who the enemy suspects are, the enemy agents. And you're all going to take agents. There are various missions. They're going to change how the game's played, a bit like The Crew, in terms of different elements are going to come in, and perhaps there's certain communication rules in certain missions. We haven't got through all the book yet, but it looks like there's some really interesting stuff to change the way, the flow of the game, so you're not playing the same thing every time. Including, as we've seen in The Crew before, you have to take suspects and then maybe you do them in a certain order. So, spoiler alert, that's one of the things. Some training missions to get you started, but you are essentially taking a card, which is a suspect, putting it on a little wooden stand, hoping nobody else sees it. And then you are playing cards either in front of you or giving cards to other people. You've got cards in your hand, and those cards in your hand are providing clues about the card that's in front of you or given to other players to put down in front of them to tell you whether the card you've given them is going to give you any information on their hidden enemy agent. So, for example, if you put a card horizontal, it means that, you know, the card that you've been given doesn't match any characteristics of the card that you've got behind your screen or your on your wooden stand. And if you rotate it vertically, you're saying perhaps one of the suits matches or perhaps one of the numbers matches because there's numbers and there's suits. So it's a really, really clever deduction game. You've got a little tableau where you're crossing numbers off frantically and you're crossing colours off. And players are trying to work out what agent is behind your screen. You know, is it that blue 14 or is it the red 3? And different cards have got lots of little numbers on them. And it's kind of hard for me to articulate this into words. But if you like deduction, you're a fan of The Crew, you like working together, this is a really nice one in a card game format with a lovely production. I don't know what Pandasaurus are going to do with it, but we've been absolutely hooked on this for the past few weeks and just playing it constantly at every opportunity. Let's get Infiltrators out and play it. And you hope at some point you're going to take that cardboard gun and shoot the player's card on the card stand and say, is it the blue 14, Ryan? And you hope they're going to say yes. And if not, you've wasted one of your bullets. And if that deck runs out, and if your bullets run out, you lose the game. You lose the mission. But the game gives you, you'll be drawing up cards, you're going to get information. It's just that group think. You can't say anything about the cards you've got in your hand, and you can't give away too much. There's this hidden communication element without spoiling the game. You've got to allow players to make mistakes to make it interesting. But that's where the fun is. So if you've got a group for it, check it out. And let's see what Pandasaurus do.
How many bullets are there? How many times can you be wrong? Does it change based on missions or player count?
Yeah. So it will change based on player count, based on the missions. Maybe in some missions there's a certain amount of suspects and that increases or decreases relative to the difficulty. Perhaps there are some suits that are out, for example, in earlier missions, then you include all of them in later ones. Again, player count dependent. But some really nice ways of variability of playing a deduction game that feels fresh relative to the missions that you're doing. It's not a trick taker, but it really gives me that feeling of some of those deduction trick takers, which is why I think it was such a great addition to today's episode.
Have you ever played Crime Hotel?
No, I haven't.
Okay. That's a deduction, trick-taking game. Not really that great, in my opinion. It's a fully competitive deduction game. There's a single card that everyone's trying to figure out which one it is. It's been left out of the deck. The earlier and better you are at guessing it, the more points you're going to get. And it falls kind of flat in that regard. But besides the point, this one seems pretty cool, though, being cooperative, having different missions, changing up how you do it versus just being a different card every time, but the gameplay is the same. There's other rules or related things to it that change up, which is nice. Does a player ever have more than one card that you have to deduce from a single player, or is it always just one? Or did you not know there could be other missions?
Yeah, so for example, there might be a pool of nine suspects. There might be four players at the table. And once you've done with your suspect, once people have guessed it, and hopefully correctly, you keep going until they do, you can then draw up a new suspect. The flow of the game is going to keep changing as you play different missions. It's not just kind of, oh, well, you've got mine, okay, we're done here. It's more than that. And you feel really clever when you give clues. And for example, I'm going to give that card to another person because not only will another person on the table see that and that will help with their clue, but it will now help for the, you know, from a multiple player perspective, you can eliminate and deduce things on the table that allows for really clever cross plays. So it's as difficult or as easy as you want it to be relative to your mission, but certainly some of the harder missions allow you to have that really satisfying deduction crunchy element in a game, which I think is great.
Do you guys ever find yourself coming up with different metas? Because it sounds like from your explanation, you really only give the card horizontally or vertically. But are there other things you can do, like at a 45 degree angle, it means this. I fling it to you across the table means this. With deduction games, especially cooperative stuff like that, there's always a fine line of how much you can really give yourself before you just say, I may as well tell you my card. So is there anything that the rules allow or that you guys have just done because it seems fun?
So the rules generally disallow communication in terms of you can't go, oh, no, not that one kind of thing. And you also can't be saying to players, oh, well, don't you see that I've got the 14 out on the table? So it can't be something that's divisible into 14. It can't be that. You've got to let players make mistakes because I think that's where the fun is. Although my friend Tom has played this bajillions of times at two players, and he says that him and his partner have really developed a nice meta game for it when they play together. He's like, yeah, there's definitely a meta game there. And I think you get that from repeat plays with the same group as well. For example, he always puts that down when he's trying to do something, like you said, Ryan, but the game doesn't allow you to do the 45, you know, the 45, oh, it's got to be a free kind of game show-esque £1 million jackpot win.
Of course.
Cheat.
Yeah. So it's not like the haggis card pass on the new four-player game where you can turn a card and then after it's been passed, you tilt it in a different direction and it means you want this and then all that crazy stuff.
100%. There's definitely a meta game there, though. I will say that for sure. But the game is quite stringent. Obviously, you do what you want in your house rules kind of thing. But the game sets itself up to make you have to be clever or have to have a satisfying deduction feel by making it harder for players to communicate freely as the game continues, because that's where the challenge is, right?
For sure. Now, BGG and the box say 20 to 30 minutes. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I'd say that's probably a mission, maybe 20 minutes.
Okay.
For a mission, and obviously it's one of those games where you're like, oh, we've done a mission, should we just do another one? Or you could just play one mission, pack it away and be like, oh, well, we'll come back to it again, you know, another night, really, because like the crew, it's one you could play all night or you could just break it down into chunks, which is what we're doing. We might do one or two at a time, put it away for another day and then bring it out again. Keeps it exciting.
That's great. I know with Pandasaurus bringing it, it'll be more readily available, since currently I think the only way you can get a copy is on the BGG market for $120. So I think you should probably wait and not get it.
That's
for that
pricey. Yeah, that is probably too expensive for the game itself. And like I said, I think you can play it with a standard deck up until, you know, we'd encourage retail availability if you can get your hands on it because the production's so nice. Hopefully Pandasaurus keep the little funky gun and the little wooden bullets because they're pretty darn nice in the Hong Kong edition anyway.
Yeah, it looks great.
It's language independent, apart from the rules.
And now the cooperative aspect of everything and the crew and talking about that really makes me want to talk about the Kakapo.
The Kakapo.
You've played that, right, recently?
So I just want to say I find it quite interesting because we talked about Cheese Tricks, that's got missions, and then it's like, oh, Infiltrators, that's got missions. And now we're the Kakapo. It's just the way you said it. It's like this, the grand entrance of the Kakapo's arrived. But I've not played the Kakapo. It sounds like some mythical being at Babadook, mythical being, right? But I really want to play it. Hopefully going to get a copy. Might be one of my 12. I'm saying it on the testament of people who have played it, yourself included. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on it, Ryan. Again, I know it's like a mission based and stuff, but I'm going to let you talk about it because, you know, you're building the excitement here for something that I'm keen to try.
Totally. Now, the easiest way to explain it is it's basically the crew with polyominoes. Shortest way you could explain the game. Cooperative mission based game where you're trying to surround birds on this board with Tetris like pieces. You're doing that through trick play, and based on the card that wins will determine which piece gets placed on the board. And there are certain restrictions on certain birds. Basically, some of the sides of the tiles require certain colors to be covering it. And of course, like the crew, the missions get harder as you go. So the first mission is like super easy. You do it in two tricks and you're, or three tricks potentially, and you're done. And then eventually they start adding missions where there's multiple birds on the board that require multiple different colors, and it starts to progress further and further. Now, the game is called the Kakapo Buddy and Party because there's different rule sets for a two-player and a three- and four-player game. So the buddy is when you play two players, party is three and four. The missions, from what I gather, just at a quick look, are only slightly different. I honestly, the first four missions are exactly the same. I know that. I didn't like double check every single mission. They could be, but it's mainly the rule set. There's a couple different ways powers work, and trick play works a little bit differently in the two-player version.
Yeah, because I heard that. I read that in the two-player version, there were some extra kind of rules, extra flexibility that you've got in terms of manipulating or powers, if you like, to help you resolve the puzzle as opposed to playing it four-player.
Yeah, so I actually got the chance to play it at two-player last night. Played it at four-player at MaltCon a week or two ago now, and then played it at three-player as well last night before two-player. But anyway, the buddy version, there's these tokens that whenever you complete a trick in the party version, sorry, I'm all over the place, party version.
You good?
Whenever everybody in the trick in the party version, the three- or four-player game, plays the same color, you can spend one of these tokens to place a piece of the highest and the lowest card in the trick. Well, in the buddy version, you have that power and two additional powers that essentially let you change the color of the card you play or the number of the card you play. So it gives you more flexibility of placing pieces that you might not otherwise have had access to, because you also cut out eight cards at the beginning of the round in two players. So if you need the red six, like that's the perfect piece for you, and it's one of the cards that's cut out, then you'll have to use one of your tokens and play the red seven and then decrease it by one to turn it to the six, essentially. So you get a little bit more tools on your belt in the two-player version to make it work in a what could be otherwise harder.
Right. Are you so obviously it's early days. Are you team buddy or are you team party? So aka two-player or three to four at the moment, just based on initial plays.
I will preface it by saying I think it's too early, but okay. I think I'm team party.
Okay.
the buddy, even though it's got those two additional powers, the tricks are you play two cards each. So it's still like there's four cards in the trick. So it's trying to simulate a four-player game.
Yeah.
But how the trick resolves is still the same. So you have these big, massive 16-card hands, and you're playing eight tricks, two cards in each trick. So it's almost a little bit too much information. And then they give you the eight cards that are cut out to make it harder and try and figure out how to solve the puzzle in case cards are cut out. But then they give you the abilities to change the cards to help solve the cards that were cut out. So it's like they made it harder, but then they made it easier again. So I don't know how cohesive it is altogether yet. Whereas Party, it's just you put more people in the game. And it's something like, you know, Quirky Circuits, where it's actually funnier when there's more people messing with stuff.
Yeah, it's a funny one, because obviously Quirky Circuits and Roomba vacuum cleaners. And I realized if you don't know what Quirky Circuits is, well, that kind of captures it. A puzzle, programmatic game, right? We could talk about Quirky Circuits all day because I know Ryan loves it.
Easily.
I enjoy it. But with Quirky Circuits, for example, if there's two player, you have got less people to allow for margins for error. If somebody plays a card, you know, for example, it was the other person who kind of messed it up and therefore the cat vacuum couldn't clean up all the dust bunnies. Back to Kakapo, I imagine, Ryan, with more people, there is more margin for error. It's less of this perfect puzzle and there's less flexibility in terms of swapping out some of those cards, like you said. But that's also interesting, isn't it, when people make mistakes and suboptimal plays can lead to interesting moments at the table.
Especially in the Kakapo, because when the winner places the tiles on the board, there's no communication allowed. You can't discuss where you think the piece should go. If somebody wants to place a tile in a spot that they think's great for it, but somebody else doesn't want it to go there, they just have to let it happen. And then you have to make do and then adjust from there and figure out how to work around it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can see it, two players and people having conversations at the table, because it's hard to know. We talked about it with Infiltrators. Sometimes with these games, it's hard to know where to draw the line. And if you play exactly by the rules, that's great. But inevitably, there will be groups out there who expand on that a little bit, right? So it's just trying to define where that point is. And so, yeah, I think, for me, I'll try it both ways, but I'm leaning towards wanting to try it more based on your description at the party level, just to get everybody involved in this group puzzle and trying to make it work.
Yeah. Another point to make on the how far do you push that boundary of what you can or can't say, because this game is a spatial element puzzle, it's really hard to not give away what you might be thinking, because you're looking at the bird on the board and you're looking at your hands and you're seeing which pieces could be placed and you're trying to imagine on the board where those pieces would go. And for some people, that's not that easy to do. It's hard to truly figure out without the piece actually being on the board and covering up the space what it'll be. So what you have to do is you have to grab the piece from the board and say, don't mind me, I'm just practicing hypothetically what would happen if this piece went here. And then you're basically giving away what you want to happen and what piece you want to cover up a spot. So it's a little difficult with that, because if you want to be like, no one can touch any piece and do anything, you got to play the card. And if you play the wrong card, figure it out. That could be fine too, as long as your whole group is ready for that and everyone ahead of time agrees to that type of play. But it can also be kind of funny though when you do open it up a little bit more, because even then you do that, you put the piece, you see where it wants to go, and somebody else wins the trick anyways and has to place a different piece.
Yeah, and I guess you could do a couple of rounds and just completely have that discussion. I imagine once you've played it and you get into it more and you go to that higher difficulty level, your brain probably becomes more accustomed to putting these pieces down in optimal places. And like you said, even if you do or don't, somebody else could just come along and may have a different idea about how that the puzzle needs to be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first of a kind that you know of, Polyomino Trick Taker, with regards to cooperative element?
All of those pieces together, I would say yes. I do know there is another Polyomino Trick Taker out there. I'm blanking on the name right now, but it's one of those where it was like handmade at a Tokyo game market. There was 10 copies available or something. Uh-huh. I've just seen pictures, so I've never played it, but I do know one exists.
Never to be seen again.
Out there. Yeah, never to be seen again, basically. So as far as a board element with the spatial reasoning and Polyomino's cooperative, this is definitely a new boundary we are pushing past.
Okay. And one mission, whole hand, is that mission. Okay. Do we think that replay... Is it too early to talk about replayability, Ryan?
Probably so. I've only ever made it to the fourth mission. At this point, the two sittings of the game I've had, it's been with new people. So just like the regular crew, if you're playing with new people who've never played it before, you're like, oh, I don't want to do the first mission. It's almost too easy. Let's jump ahead. But you're like, well, just in case, let's do it. Mm-hmm. So I've only done the first four missions. The first mission honestly just shouldn't exist. It's just, it's almost even easier than the crew first mission. It's the purple bird that needs to be covered. You just play the purple cards, which starts out the game as the Trump suit. You play purple suit two or three tricks, and it's done. So you don't really get a feel or vibe for the game. You start getting the other birds, and then one where there's two birds, you get more of how the flow works. As far as just the 20 missions that exist in the game and the meta of the game, I could see it evolving to where there might not be so much replayability. Again, very early to say. I could be wrong and I could eat my hat in 2 months from now after I've played it more. The right plays, specific birds just needing specific pieces, ones that just make sense for it. There's a bird that takes the blue 8. It fits perfectly on it. There's just almost a reason why you would almost never not use that card or that piece on that bird. So eventually, if you play the same people, you'll have that meta of just knowing, oh, this bird's out. Let's make sure we do that one. And then the next piece to go onto the side of it is going to be the green 6. And so you can potentially have that happening. Now, because the board itself is relatively big and there's enough birds out there, you can make your own missions. Randomly place the bird 1 to 3, potentially, somewhere on the board and make it work.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea of that, right? That's kind of what I always wanted to do with my copy of Hamelin Cave, and then Sale came along and was like, well, you can make your own missions. That's cool. Yeah. So I think obviously you play what's in the box. 20 missions, Ryan, right?
20 missions, yes. For both buddy and party. Again, not 100% confirmed how different they are.
And we'll just say, like, maybe it's actually 19 because that first mission, yeah, unless you're playing with children, sounds right really easy. But I'd be very keen to get this to the table because it's so different, play it with my group, and it might be one of my 12, and talk again on the episode. And I know that, you know, in the next coming weeks and months, perhaps you've had surpassed mission 4 and you've finally beaten it with your birds. Be good to have a regroup and discuss that further on a future episode.
I do plan on playing it this coming Friday. It'll be with new people again, so I'll be starting. But hopefully we can play in a long enough sitting where we can get past some of these same missions I've played, getting to some new stuff.
And are you going to tell them to get their purple cards ready?
I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let them discover on their own. Rodney Smith style.
Like it. And will you be starting from mission 1, though? I suppose you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
I'm going to start with mission 1. I'm always a huge, huge fan of play the game rules as written, especially if you're teaching it to someone the first time. Don't show them any fancy variant or whatever that I might have come with that I think might make the game better. They deserve to play the game as it was intended first. And if they seem to have problems with that, then maybe introduce it. So yes, I will still do the first mission.
And I was going to say, though, you said, oh, there's a bird that fits the Blue 8, right? It's, you know, it seems to fit the Blue 8 like a glove, right? So what if the Blue 8's taken up the deck, though, and you're playing the party mode? Does that then make the challenge a bit harder?
Well, it won't be out. In the party mode, if you're playing three players, only one card is cut, and it's always the purple one. Players, it's all the cards. Only in Buddy are there eight cards cut out, but then you have the abilities to change the cards so you can still get the pieces you potentially want.
Okay. Yeah, it's just the naming conventions. It's hilarious trying to navigate, discuss the game, and then trying to be like, Buddy, party, what are we talking about here, right? So
now, again, though, I hope that some of the later missions that increase in difficulty will show the puzzle needed.
Okay.
The way you lose is if you run out of cards, you have no more tricks to play, or you can't legally place one of the pieces on the board. Placement rules for placing a piece is essentially whatever you want. It goes wherever on the board you need it to. So if you ended up winning a trick with a card that you didn't really want to win with, just put that piece over in the corner. But you can only do that so many times, and there's some really awkward shaped pieces, and you might put yourself in a situation where you just can't place anything. I look forward to where it actually comes down to crunch time and trying to figure out where that turning point of a trick or a round would matter.
Yeah, I want the game to be able to put me into that situation where it's actually the significant challenge increase. Games like Polyomino games in general, Alice's Garden, there's games like that where it's like, oh, you know, I can't put a piece down now because I've suboptimally placed my other pieces. So what you're saying, Ryan, is you really hope the game takes you there, because obviously you've completed four missions so far. It hasn't yet, albeit they're some of the easier missions in the game. That's right, yeah?
Yeah, I would say that's very much right. Okay. The difficulty in the game gives it a 1 to 5 star rating, and currently the only ones we've done are 1 and 2 star difficulty. So there's clearly still some more difficulty yet to come.
Right. 5 star must mean 5 star if this game's going to get a Ryan Interesting Award at some point.
It's gotta. You gotta live up to the 5 star. Now, I did see on at least the Buddy missions, the number 20, the last mission, is all 5 of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Kakapo birds pieces together on the board. And those are all essentially completely surrounded with a single color. So they're going to require some craziness. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. It might take 2 years at the rate I'm going to get to that mission. It's like with Quirky Circuits. I've played that game so many times now, but I've yet to play Lefty. It's the last of the 4 robots, because every time I play the game, almost every time, it's always with people new. So I have to do Gizmo and do Gizmo and do Gizmo, which I'm not complaining at all. I don't want to talk about Quirky Circuits. Nope, we're not talking about... Game's amazing. I'm moving on.
Yeah, I had a problem with the cat in the last game. But anyway, it's so always good. The one that's left over, right? Lefty, irony. Quirky Circuits episode / Kakapo. Mm-hmm. Like it.
Yeah, and just in case anyone who's listening is thinking, oh, I have a copy of that game. Does that mean you've increased the number for your challenge for 12 games? I actually do not, because I technically bought this game back in 2023. It only just arrived to me now. But small update, I am still at 2 of 12 because I did buy Makafuda, which would have put me at 3, but I unbacked Earthborn Rangers. So I am still at 2.
Okay. Found a loophole. I like it.
And the price difference, a $310 Earthborn Rangers versus a $35 card game, absolutely worth it.
So you saved a few dollars in the process, and I know you've, for anybody who wants to check out Makaifuda, if you want to check that game out, your YouTube channel, Ryan, Cards Unbarred for Rules, has released a rules video. So if anybody's curious about that, then I am plugging you, because you might not plug yourself. So there you go.
Appreciate it. Yep. Just dropped today, yesterday. But yeah, you can check out the rules video for it. Apologies for my super bright hands. The sun was coming in hot that day, and I didn't tilt the blinds properly. But hopefully you enjoy the video, and hopefully it's helpful.
And you regard it, so very early impressions, and I know you believe you talked about it on the episode we've done, but you like the game.
Yeah, game's great. So far. It's my profile picture, and whenever I do that, you know I really enjoy the game.
You know, it gets an interesting award.
Yes. Oh, that game, I think this might be a bold statement, but I think it might get an Essential Award. It's an early, early statement. I don't want to finalize it. But to me, it's one of the best must-not-follow trick takers, in my opinion. The twist of bidding on the majority of the suit versus number of tricks you take is really cool. Seeing the potential hidden partnership that evolves through the game, there's a little bit of that deduction of trying to figure out who's what color to make sure they don't win. And if they are on your side, you want them to win. You still get points. It's less points when multiple people are sharing it, but some points are better than no points. And I just, it's a good time. I'm a big fan of it. Check out the rules video if you want to see more. There you go. Look at that. I'm plugging myself.
Okay. There you go. Up there with Tricky Time Crisis then. Must not follow. And need to play this game, Ryan. Jury's still out on Kakapo, right? Because that needs to get played more to that 5-star difficulty level before the big recommend comes in. But this is one I like the look of the art on. So, yeah. Need to try it.
I hope you do.
Hope I do. Cool.
Yeah, I think that was all we had slated for the episode. We threw in a lot more that we weren't planning on, as we usually do, so that was good.
Par for the course. We've chock-a-blocked it full of interesting games, hopefully.
And plenty of homework for Schultzy to do for later.
Graphs and diagrams and auto-sums, formulas.
Exactly. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of Trick Talkers. You can find all of our information on our link tree, which is in the show notes below, or you can reach us at Twitter at Trick Talkers or by email at tricktalkers@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening as always. Hope you've enjoyed the episode. We'll catch you on the next one.
See you around.